You see Murphy and the police again, you better be careful or you're going to get shot to death resisting arrest.
I'll be careful, I said.
Yeah.
One more thing, my double said.
You have forgotten about Parker and the street wolves entirely. Parker needs you dead if he's going to remain in control of his people.
Yeah, you'd have thought he'd been more on the ball than this.
Exactly, my double said. You've been hiding and away from your apartment for a while, but you show up in public again, you can bet Parker will be on your trail. And think, he knew the real deal between you and Marconi, and he's a petty thug in Chicago. There's probably a connection between them, and you've been too dumb to think of it.
Stars above, I muttered.
It's not as if the situation's very complicated. No pressure, right? At least you're willing to deal with it now, instead of just closing your eyes and pretending they don't see you. Be careful, Harry. It's a real mess, and you're the only one who can clean it up.
Well, who are you, my mother? I asked.
My double snapped his fingers. That reminds me. Right, your mother. He broke off, glanced up and around him, an expression of frustration coming over his face.
Oh, hell.
And then someone was shaking my unwounded shoulder, shaking me roughly awake. I blinked open my eyes in shock, and all the pains of my body came flooding back to me with a renewed energy and agony. My brain reeled for a few minutes, trying to shift gears. I was sitting in the passenger seat of Susan's car. We were rolling down an expressway somewhere, but rain was clouding the view of the skyline so I couldn't orient myself to where we were. The glowing numbers of the dashboard clock said it was only a few minutes after 9. I'd had less than a half an hour's sleep. There was an old beach towel wrapped around my wounded foot, and my face felt cool, as if someone had been wiping it clean.
"Is he awake?" Susan said, her voice high and panicky. "Is he awake?"
"I'm awake," I said, blearily, blinking open my eyes. "Sort of. What? This better be good."
"It is not good," Tara said from the back seat. "If you have any power left, Wizard, you should be prepared to use it. We are being followed."
Chapter 21. I rubbed at my eyes and mumbled some vague curse at whoever was following us.
Okay. Give me a minute.
Harry, said Susan, I'm almost on empty. I don't know if we have a minute.
It never rains, I moaned.
Tara frowned at me. It's raining now, she turned to Susan. I do not think he is coherent.
I snorted and looked around blearily.
It's a figure of speech. Hell's bells, you really don't know anything about humans, do you?
Are you sure there's someone following us? Tara glanced back at the traffic behind us. 2 cars back, and 3 cars behind that one. 2 vehicles are following us.
How can you tell? I asked.
Tara turned those odd amber eyes back to me. They move like predators. They move well. And I feel them.
I narrowed my eyes.
Feel them? On an instinctual level? Tara shrugged.
I feel them, she repeated. They are dangerous.
The taste of blood was still in my mouth. Annoying input, like static on a phone. Of all the people who might be chasing me in cars, I could only think of a few who would trigger supernatural senses of an inhuman being. I thought that it might be a pretty good idea to listen to what my dapper double had to say.
Susan, I said, I want you to get off the expressway.
Her dark eyes flashed beneath the street lamps as she looked at me, then down at her fuel gauge.
I have to, in the next couple of miles anyway. What do you want me to do?
Pull off. Get to a gas station. She flashed me another nervous look, and I had the time to note that she was gorgeous, like some sort of Latin goddess. Of course, I might have been a little less than entirely objective.
Then what? She said.
I checked my foot and idly took off my remaining boot so that my hips would be parallel with the floor while I was standing. Call the police.
What?
Susan exclaimed and guided her car off the freeway and down the exit ramp. I felt around in the jumpsuit's tool pouch until I came up with a little sports bottle with my second potion in it.
Just do it, I said. Trust me on this one.
Wizard, Tara said, her voice still utterly calm. There is no one but you who can help my fiancé. I shot Tara an annoyed glance. I'll meet you where you hold your Cub Scout meetings. Harry, Susan said, what are you talking about? She pulled the car down the exit ramp onto a one-way access road. I understand what you are doing, Tara said. I would do the same for my mate.
Mate? Susan said indignantly. Mate, I am most certainly not his...
I didn't want to hear the rest of what Susan said, because I grabbed my blasting rod in one hand, the potion in the other, opened the door to the car, unfastened my seatbelt, and rolled out onto the shoulder of the road. I know. It sounds really stupid in retrospect, even to me. But it made sort of a chivalrous cockamamie sense at the time. I was pretty sure that Parker and his cronies in the Street Wolves were shadowing us, and I had a precise idea of how dangerous they could be. I had to assume that they were even worse during the full moon. Susan had no idea of the level of danger she was in, and if I stayed near her, I would only draw her more deeply into it. And Tara... I still didn't trust Tara. I wasn't sure I wanted her fighting at my back. I wanted to deal with my pursuers myself, to deal with my own mistake myself, and not to make an innocent bystander like Susan pay for it. So, I threw myself out of the passenger seat of a moving car. Don't look at me like that. I'm telling you, it made sense at the time. I held out my arms and legs in a circle, as though I was trying to hug a barrel, and then scrape, scrape, rip, bumpity, 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 whip, 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 thud. Everything whirled around the whole while. I managed somehow to keep my sense of direction, to maintain my momentum, largely in a roll, and to angle myself toward the dubious comfort of the thick weeds at the side of the access road. By the time I came to a stop, I was among freshly crushed plants, all damp and cold from the rain, the smell of mud and grass and asphalt and exhaust clogging up my nose. There was pain, pain everywhere, spreading out from my shoulder and my foot, whirling dizziness, blackness that rode on my eyelids and tried to force them down. I struggled to remember what I had planned on doing when I'd thrown open the door to Susan's car. It came to me in a moment, and I jerked the squeezed top of the sports bottle open with my teeth and then crushed the plastic bottle, forcing the potion inside it out through the narrow nozzle into my mouth. 8 ounces of cold coffee, I thought, dimly. Yum. It tasted like stale cardboard and too old pizza and burned coffee beans. But as it went down my gullet, I could feel the power in the brew spreading out in me, active and alive, as though I had swallowed a huge, hyperkinetic amoeba. My fatigue quite simply vanished, and energy came rushing into me like it sometimes does at the end of a good concerto or overture. The pain receded to levels I could manage. The soreness lifted out of my muscles, and my cloudy, cloggy thought process cleared as though someone had flushed my synapses with jalapeno. My heart rate surged, and then held steady, and then I came to an abrupt conclusion that things just weren't as bad as I thought they were. I pushed myself up using my bad arm, just to spite the injury that Agent Ben had dealt me, and brushed myself off. My jumpsuit was torn, and there was fresh blood on it, scrapes from the asphalt and darkening bruises on my legs and arms that I could already see. Annoying little bastards. I held them in contempt. I shook my shield bracelet loose around my left wrist, took my blasting rod in my right hand, and turned toward the access road. I drew in a breath, smelling the odor of the rain on the asphalt, and more distantly the crisp, clean scent of autumn, almost buried by Chicago's stink. I considered how much I loved the autumn and composed a brief poem about it as I watched traffic force Susan's car on down the access road and out of sight, and then turned my head to view a pair of cars cut frantically across traffic and cruise down the access road. The lead car was a 2-ton pickup, one of the really big ones, and Parker sat behind the wheel, looking around wildly until his eyes lit upon me, standing there in the tall weeds beside the road. I smiled at him and contemplated his shocked expression to my own satisfaction. Then I drew in a breath, and my renewed will with it, lifted the rod in my right hand, murmured a phrase in a language I didn't know,
and blew the tires off his fucking truck. They all went at once, in one satisfying thump, complete blowouts, resulting from a sudden heating of the air inside the tires. Pretty slick spell to pull off on the fly, heating up the air inside the tires of a moving vehicle. The truck slewed left and right, and I could see Parker frantically rolling the steering wheel in an effort to maintain control. Two people sat in the cab with him, faces I didn't recognize from here, and they evidently didn't believe in seatbelts. They were tossed about the inside of the truck like toys. The truck careened off the road in a spray of gravel, went past me into the weeds, hit some sort of ditch, and went into a perilous roll. There was an enormous crunching sound. Car wrecks, when they happen for real and not on television, are surprisingly noisy. They sound like someone pounding empty trash cans out of shape with a sledgehammer, only louder. Parker's truck tumbled over twice, crunched into the side of a hill, and lay there on its passenger side. "Well, then," I said with a certain amount of professional pride, "that should take care of that." I spoke too soon. There was a brittle grinding sound, and the windshield of the truck exploded into a hectic spiderweb pattern. The sound repeated itself, and the safety glass shattered outwards, followed by a foot wearing a heavy black combat boot. More glass flew outward, and then people started crawling out of the pickup, battered and bloodied. Beside Parker, there was a lantern-jawed lout whose nose I had flattened a few days ago, his nose now swollen and grotesque, and the bloodthirsty woman who had led the group in their berserk fit of lust. They were all dressed in the same variations of denim and leather, and cuts and bruises from the tossing they'd had were much in evidence. Parker led them out of the truck, looked back at it, stunned. Then he looked at me. I saw fear flicker in his eyes, and it brought out a satisfied surge within my own pounding heart. Served him right, the jerk. I spun my rod around once in my fingers, started whistling a bit from the overture to Carmen, and walked toward them through the grass, annoyed that I was limping and that I was dressed in a ridiculous blue jumpsuit that left inches of my arms and legs bare. Flatnose saw me and grunted out some sort of Neanderthal noise of surprise. He drew a handgun from inside his jacket, and it looked tiny in his hands. Without preamble, he started squeezing off shots at me. I lifted my left hand, forced more of my boundless energy through the shield bracelet, and sang a few phrases in what I suppose could have been taken for Italian to verbally encase the spell. I continued walking forward as the bullets bounced off the shield before my hand in cascades of sparks, and I even had enough breath left over to keep whistling Carmen. Parker snarled and slashed at Flatnose's wrists with the edge of his hand in a martial arts-style movement. I heard a bone break, very clearly, but Flatnose only jerked his hand back toward his body and flashed Parker a scowl. "Remember why we're here," the shorter man said. "He's mine." "Hello there, Mr. Parker," I called cheerfully. I suppose that the image I presented as I walked toward them would have been comic, except for all the blood and the big smile I felt spreading all over my face. It seemed to have a somewhat intimidating effect on the street wolves, at any rate. The woman snarled at me, and for a second I could feel the wild, savage energy, the same that surrounded the frenzied lycanthropes at the Full Moon Garage, starting to build in the air around me. I gave the bitch an annoying look and slashed my hand in the air, drawling, "Dispodoras." I forced out an effort of will I might have found daunting on any other night, one when I was feeling a little less all-powerful, and the woman jerked back as though I had slapped her in the mouth. The energy she had been gathering fractured and flew apart as though it had never been. She stared at me, growing tense and nervous, and reached a hand toward a knife in a case at her hip. "Let's not have that nonsense. As I was saying," I continued, "hello there, Mr. Parker. I know why you're here. Heard about the ruckus on the police scanner and came by the station looking for me, right? I hate to disappoint you, but I'm not going to allow you to kill me." Flatnose scowled and said, "How did you know the—" Parker shoved the heel of his hand across Flatnose's mouth in a sharp blow, and the big man shut up. "Mr. Dresden," Parker growled. He eyed me up and down.
What exactly makes you think you can stop me from killing you?
I had to smile at the man. I mean, you have to smile at idiots and children.
Oh, I don't know, I chuckled. Maybe because the second you step out of line, I'm going to wreck you a whole hell of a lot worse than that truck. And because in just a couple of minutes, the police are going to arrive and sort you out. There was a momentary flash of dimness where the streetlight seemed to fade, the rain to grow very cold, and then it was gone again. I blinked a little blood out of my eyes and renewed my smile. Mustn't let the children see weakness. Parker snarled his thin lips into a smile. He had bad teeth. The cops are after your ass, too, Dresden, he said. I don't believe you. Once they're here, I'm going to mysteriously disappear, I said. Just like, well, gosh, magic. But you guys are... I forgot what I was going to say for a moment. There was something nagging at the back of my mind, a detail I had forgotten.
I can smell your blood, wizard, Parker said very quietly. God, you got no idea what it smells like.
Parker didn't move, but the woman let out a mewling sound and pressed against Flatnose's side. Her eyes were focused intently on me.
Get a good whiff, I managed to say. It's the last time you'll smell it.
But my smile was gone. The creeping vine of uncertainty was beginning to crack the wall of confidence I had been enjoying. The rain was getting colder, the lights dimmer. My extended left arm began to ache, starting at the wounded shoulder, and my hand shook visibly. Pain started leaking in again from every part of my battered body. Sanity returned in a rush. The potion was giving out on me. I had pushed myself way too hard while the first euphoria was going over me, dispelling the intimate aura of rage and lust that the women had begun to gather over them had been a feat I would never have considered in a stable frame of mind. There were too many unknowns. My heart was laboring along now, and I started panting. I couldn't get enough breath to slow down my rocketing heartbeat. Parker and his two companions grew tense together, all at once, with no visible signal passing between them. I could feel that wild energy again coursing down to the lycanthropes from beyond the rain clouds overhead. I swear to you, I could see the cuts on their body from the crash closing up before my eyes. Flatnose rolled the wrist that had just been broken, flexed his fingers at me, and gave me a grim smile. Okay, Harry, I told myself. Keep calm. Do not panic. All you have to do is hold them here until the cops get here, and then you can bleed to death in peace. Or get a doctor. Whichever hurts less.
You know, Parker, I said, and my voice had a fluttering quaver to it, a fast, desperate quality. I didn't really mean to show you up at your garage. Hell, I wouldn't have even been there at all if Denton's goon hadn't turned me on to the idea.
That doesn't matter now, Parker said. His voice had a quiet, certain tone to it, and he had visibly relaxed. He smiled at me and showed me more of his teeth. That's all part of the past. Then Parker took a step forward, and I panicked. I jammed the rod at him and snarled, Fuego! I funneled my will through it, and to hell with what the council thought of me killing someone with magic. Nothing happened. I stared in disbelief. First at Parker, then at the blasting rod. My fingers went numb as I looked at them, and the rune-engraved ash rod fell to the ground, though I tried a clumsy grab to catch it. Instead, my weight came down on my torn foot, and the ripped muscles went into a sudden cramp that sent fresh agony up through my leg. It buckled and pitched me forward into the weeds and the mud. The last wisps of my shield vanished as I fell. My magic had failed me altogether. Parker laughed, a low and nasty sound. Nice trick. Got another? One more, I rasped, and fumbled at my jumpsuit's tool pouch. Parker walked slowly toward me, confident, relaxed, and moving like a man 30 years younger than he. My fingers were aching with cold, torn from the asphalt,
numb from all the pain and scrapes and bruises, but the handle of my chief's special was easy enough to find. I drew it out, thumbed the back of the hammer, and pointed at Parker. His eyes widened and his weight settled back on his heels, not quite retreating, but not coming any closer either. From 3 feet away, even down in the mud, it would be tough to miss him, and he knew it.
"I didn't pick you for the kind to carry a gun," he said.
The rain was plastering his greasy hair down over his eyes.
"Only on special occasions," I said back. I had to delay him. If I could only hold him in place just for a few minutes, the cops would show up. I had to believe they would, because if they didn't, I was dead meat. Maybe literally.
"Stop where you are." He didn't. He took a step toward me. So I shot him. The gun roared, and the bullet smacked into his right kneecap. It exploded in a burst of blood and flying chips of bone, and the leg went out from under him, hurling him into the muddy ground. He blinked once, surprised, but the pain he must have been feeling didn't seem to register. He scooted back a couple of feet and stared at me for a second, reassessing me. Parker then drew his legs beneath him and, ignoring his ruined knee, hunkered down on his heels and rested his elbows on his thighs as if we were old friends, keeping his hands in plain sight.
"You're tougher than you look. We tried to catch you at your apartment, you know," he said, as though I hadn't just shot him. "But the cops were all over it. Police band said you'd gotten arrested, but I guess you got away. We paid the jailer to let us know when they rounded you up." He grinned his snaggletooth grin and looked almost friendly.
"Hell, kid, we were hanging around in a bar 2 blocks from the station for almost 2 days, just hoping to be there when you brought you up the steps. Drive by." He pointed his finger at me in a bang-bang motion and let his thumb fall forward.
"Sorry to disappoint you," I mumbled. I was working hard not to give in to the shakes, the cold or the darkness. I knew he was up to something, but there was too much to deal with, too much injury, too much exhaustion, too much blood on my hands. Parker chuckled.
"And instead, everything goes to hell at the station. Gunshots, explosions, sounds like a war inside, which is fun to watch. And then we see you stumbling out of the middle of it, right there in front of the cop station, with a cute little piece on either side of you helping you down the stairs. We just rolled out right after your ass."
"I hope you're insured."
Parker shrugged. "Truck wasn't mine." He plucked up a long blade of grass and traced it over the ruin of his knee, painting it red with his blood before crushing it up in his fingers.
"Most of my people are out by the lake tonight. They gotta let off some steam during the full moon.
Damn, but I want to take you right out there, in front of all of them. You got a real badass reputation, kid."
"Can't have everything you want," I said. I blinked rain or blood from my eyes.
Parker's smile widened.
"You know, kid, I think there's something you don't know." In the distance, I could hear the sounds of sirens speeding down the freeway toward me. "Hot damn," I thought. "I finally did something right."
"Oh, yeah?" I asked, daring to feel a satisfied thrill of victory. Parker nodded and looked off to one side.
"There were 2 cars behind you." And something smashed down on my right hand, making it go numb and sending the gun to earth. I looked up and had the time to see another of the lycanthropes from the garage lift a lead pipe wrapped in electrical tape and bring it down hard on me.
The woman screamed and rushed toward me. She had steel-toed boots. Flat-Nose lumbered after her and was content to use the barrel of his pistol as a dumb club. Parker just sat there, squatting on his heels, and watched them. I could see his eyes. My blood spattered onto his cheek. I don't like thinking about what they did. They didn't want to kill me. They wanted to hurt me. And they were good at it. I couldn't fight. I couldn't even curl up into a ball. There wasn't that much spirit left in me. I could hear myself making choking sounds, gagging on my own blood, sobbing and retching in a pathetic agony. I would have screamed if I could have. You hear stories about men who keep silent through all the torture and agony that everyone inflicts on them,
but I'm just not that strong. They broke me. At some point, the mind says, no more, and it gets the hell away from the pain. I started going there, to that away place, and I wasn't sorry to do it at all. I could dimly hear Parker shoving people off me once I stopped moving. He broke a few more of their bones, and they backed off with snarls of rage. He was walking on the leg again, already, though my shot must have torn the joint to pieces. At his orders, they picked me up and carried me to another car, just lugged me like a sack of broken parts. Duct tape went around my wrists and ankles and knees and elbows and mouth. Then they threw me into the trunk. Parker reached up to close the lid. I didn't have enough energy to move my eyes. I just stared out, letting them focus wherever they would. I saw a face behind the wheel of a car going past on the access road, just a sedan, something that would blend in with all the other cars in the city. The face was young, strained, sprinkled with freckles, and hair red, the ears big. Roger Harris, FBI, Denton's red-headed lackey. The sedan rolled by without even slowing, and Harris didn't look over at me, didn't break his surveillance. I wasn't the only one, it seemed, who was being followed that night. Parker slammed shut the trunk, leaving me in darkness. The car started going just as the sirens began to arrive at the access road. My captor's car bounced along and made a casual getaway, leaving me in an agony more thorough, sickening, and acute than any I'd felt before. And behind the gag, I started laughing. I couldn't help it. I laughed, and it sounded like I was choking on raw sewage. The pieces had fallen into place.
Chapter 22. There's a point after which one cannot possibly continue doing complicated things like thinking and keeping one's eyes open. Blackness ensues, and everything stops until the body or the mind is ready to function again. The blackness came for me, and I welcomed it. When I started to wake up, I smelled motor oil. That in itself boded ill. I was seated upright, with an upright metal beam pressed into my back. I felt something constricting my wrists and my ankles. Duct tape, still, perhaps. There was a cold concrete floor beneath me. I was aching everywhere, and stiff. But there was something soft over me. A blanket, maybe. I wasn't as cold as I might have been. My first emotion was a vague surprise that I was still alive. The second was a cold, nasty little shiver. I was a prisoner. And as long as I was, survival was by no means certain. First things first, then. Make it certain. Find out where I was, devise a plan, and get my skinny wizard ass out of there. After all, it would have been a real pity to die when I finally put the tabs on who had gotten me into this mess, as well as who was responsible for the recent killings that couldn't be attributed to McFinn, and probably who had set him up as well. To that end, I opened my eyes and tried to get a look at my surroundings. I was in the enemy's stronghold, the Full Moon Garage. It was dim inside, and from what I could see, it was still raining without. There was a dirty but warm blanket over me, which came as something of a surprise. There was also a little stand with a mostly empty plastic bag of what I took to be blood, dripping down a plastic tube that vanished behind me, out of my sight, and presumably ended at my arm. I wiggled my feet out from beneath the blanket. My legs had been duct-taped together, above and below the knee and at the ankle. My bitten foot had been wrapped in clean bandages, and then covered with my bloody sock. In fact, I found a number of clean bandages on various cuts and scrapes, and I could smell, faintly, as though my nose had been given a while to get used to it, the sharp medical smell of disinfectant. I couldn't feel Murphy's sawed-through handcuffs on my wrists, and found myself vaguely missing them. At least they'd been familiar, if not comfortable. So, not only was I alive, but I was in considerably better shape after presumably several hours of sleep and medical attention. But that didn't explain who had done this to me, or why. I looked around the dimness of the garage. My eyes were just now adjusting to it, but even so, there were pockets of shadows too deep to see into. An L-shaped ribbon of yellow light showed beneath the door to the manager's office, and the sound of rain on the corrugated roof was a low, soothing roar. I closed my eyes, trying to orient myself, to determine what time it was from the feel of the air and the sound of the rain. Late afternoon, early evening, I couldn't tell for sure. I coughed and found my throat dry, but functional. My hands were bound, and I didn't have any way of making a circle. Without a circle, I couldn't use any delicate magic to free myself. All I had access to was the kaboom sort of power, which, while great against nasty loup-garous and other monsters, isn't much good for getting rid of several layers of duct tape resting within a half an inch of my own tender skin. Magic was out. Did I ever tell you about my dad? He was a magician. Not a wizard, mind you, but a magician. The kind you see in old-fashioned magic shows. He had a black top hat, white rabbit, basket of swords and everything. He used to travel around the country, performing for the kids and the old folks, barely making enough to scrape by. After Mom died in childbirth, Dad had the job of raising me all by himself. I guess he did the best he could. He meant well. I was real young when he died. I refused to believe Sean Zagaroth's insinuations until I had looked into them further, of a brain aneurysm. But I learned a thing or three about what he did before then. He'd named me after three magicians, after all, the first of which was Houdini himself. And one of Houdini's first rules was that the means of escape was always within your grasp. Positive attitude. It's a fact that a human being can escape from just about anything, given enough time. The only thing was, how much time did I have left? The duct tape was strong, and it was fastened tightly, but it was cheap, easy to transport, and simple to apply. Even though it was wound about me in layers and layers, it wasn't the best thing for holding people, or else the cops would use duct tape and not handcuffs or manacles. It could be beaten. So I started looking for ways to beat it. A little writhing showed me that my hands weren't fastened as tightly as they could have been. I could feel a sharp little pain in my forearm and guessed that that was from an IV. They had to loosen the tape on my arms to get the needle into my forearm. I wiggled my shoulders, which set the wounded one to aching fiercely. The tape put pressure on my wrists and tore the hair from my arm with an audible ripping sound. I clenched my teeth over this particular torment. It hurt, and it took me the best part of 10 minutes, but I got my wrists and hands free. I ditched the IV needle while I was at it, imagining some deadly fluid flowing down from the tube into my veins. Then I flexed my arms repeatedly and got them free. My fingers were numb, stiff, not really responding, but I started fumbling at the tape on my legs as best I could, trying to get tears started so I could just flex my legs and get the whole thing to go at once. It took more effort than I thought it would, but I finally flexed my legs, thankful that the jumpsuit kept me from losing strips of hair from my thighs and calves, if not from my ankles. My legs were much stronger than my arms, so snapping the layers of duct tape on them was a lot simpler and quicker. Just not simple or quick enough. Before I'd gotten out of the last loop of duct tape, there was a click-clack, and the office door swung open, accompanied by the murmur of low voices and the tinny din of old-time rock and roll music. I panicked. I couldn't run. My ankles were still bound. By the time I got free and struggled to my feet, they'd be on me. So I did the next best thing. I whipped the blanket up and over me, snaked my hands behind the pole, grabbed the IV needle as I went, and concealed it in my hand, and bent my head forward as though I were asleep.
"I still don't see why we just don't put a bullet in him and dump him,"
said the harsh voice with no nasal tone at all, flat nose. "Stupid," Parker growled, his voice like sandpaper. "One, we don't do it without having the others here to see, and two, we don't do it until Marconi's had a chance to see him."
"Marcone?" Flatnose said, with a sneer in his voice. "What's he want with him?"
Good question, I thought. I kept my head down, my body relaxed, and tried to think sleepy thoughts. Marconi was coming here?
"Who cares?" Parker answered. "I made sure he'd live through the day. Either way, I want him here tonight. No skin off my teeth. Flatnose grunted.
Chicago sees a lot of mobsters. Marcotti's just one more. But one call from him and this wizard character gets the reprieve. Who is this guy, huh? The freaking governor?
Always thinking with your balls, Parker said, his voice calm. Marconi isn't just a mobster. Running Chicago is just his sideline, see? He's got business all over the country, and he owns people from here to the governor's mansion to Washington and back. He's got more money than God. He can set us up, take us out, have the police on our ass anytime he wants. You don't screw with someone like that lightly.
There was a pause, and then Flatnose said, Maybe. Or maybe Lana's right. Maybe you're getting soft. Marconi isn't one of us. He doesn't give us orders. The Parker I knew 10 years ago wouldn't have thought twice of telling Marconi to fuck off.
Parker's voice became resigned.
Don't do this, man. You were never good enough, even when you were young. The Parker you knew 10 years ago would have gotten us all killed by now. I've kept you in cash, in dope, women, whatever you wanted, so settle down.
I don't buy it, Flatnose said back. I think Lad is right. I say we off this skinny son of a bitch right now.
I felt myself tense and prepared to make a run for it. Hopeless or not, I'd rather get killed trying to get away than trying to pretend I was asleep.
Back down, Parker said.
Then there was a scuffling noise of boots on the old concrete. I heard a couple of grunts and an abrupt yelp, and smelled sour sweat and stale beer as Flatnose was forced to his knees less than a foot away. He kept making small noises of pain, thick with tension, as though Parker was holding him in some kind of lock. I forced myself to relax, not to just stagger up and start running, but I felt a bead of sweat trickle down my face. Parker snarled over Flatnose's whimpers.
I told you. You were never good enough. Challenge me again, in public or alone, it doesn't matter, and I will rip your heart out.
The way he spoke the threat was eerie, not with the hissing, villainous emphasis one would expect, but in a calm, measured, almost bored tone, as though he were mentioning switching out a carburetor or changing a light bulb. There was a rippling sort of sound, and Flatnose let out a howl of pain that dissolved into a string of dog-like whimpers. I heard Parker's boots move a few steps away. Now get up, he said. Call Tully's and get the others back here before the moon rises. We'll have blood tonight. And if Marconi isn't polite enough, we'll have a lot more. I heard Flatnose make his way to his feet and shuffle off in a slow and haphazard fashion. He vanished into the office and closed the doors behind him. I waited for a few moments, hoping the Parker would wander off and I could make my escape. But he didn't. Damn it. I was running out of time. If I waited until the rest of the lycanthropes returned to the garage, I would never be able to get away. The numbers would be stacked too high. If I was going to make a break for it, logically, the time was now. Of course, I was still bound. By the time I got my legs free, Parker would be on me. And I had just listened to him disable a man twice his size and threaten to rip his heart out. He meant it, too, I could tell. When I looked inside of him, I could see a dark and angry place, the source of all that power and force of will. He could tear me to pieces with his bare hands, literally. And what was worse, he would. I had to have a head start if I was going to run. I could make him mad, maybe. Antagonize him into going to get a baseball bat or another roll of duct tape for my mouth. Then I could run. Make a clean getaway. The one problem with that plan is he might just rip my heart out on the spot. But nothing ventured, nothing gained. I didn't have time to be picky. So I lifted up my head enough to squint at him in the semi-darkness and said, You certainly have a way with people. You must have read a book or something. My voice startled him, and he spun with the reflexes of a nervous cat. He stared at me for a long time before he started to relax. So... You're alive. It's just as well, I suppose. Mostly I was just tired. Thanks for the sack time. He showed me his teeth. No problem. Checkout is in a couple of hours. That scared me enough to make a rational man pee, but I only shrugged. No problem. Good thing your people can't hit.
They might have made me uncomfortable.
Parker laughed a rough laugh.
You got balls, kid. I'll give you that.
Or at least until Lana gets her teeth into them, later.
This wasn't going at all well. I had to find some way to piss him off and to make him laugh.
How's the knee?
Parker narrowed his eyes.
A lot better. It didn't quite heal up before sunrise, but I figured it'll only take an hour or so after the moon comes up.
I should have aimed higher, I said.
Parker's jaw clenched down a little.
Too late now, kid. Game over.
Enjoy it while you can. I hear your people are getting a little sick of you. Do you think Lana will be the one to tear your balls off when they put you down?
His boot came out of nowhere and hit me in the side of the head. It threw me hard to my right, and if I hadn't have clinched my arms at the last minute, it would have thrown me to the ground and revealed my lack of bonds.
You just don't know when to keep quiet, do you, wizard?
What have I got to lose? I shot back. I mean, hell. It isn't as though the people that looked up to me have turned against me, right? It isn't as though I'm getting too old to manage...
Shut up!
Parker snarled, his eyes taking in an eerie, greenish cast in the darkness, a trick of light, and he kicked me again, this time in the stomach. My breath went out in a whoosh, and I fought to continue speaking.
Waking up stiffer every morning, eating less, maybe not as strong as you used to be, right? Not as fast. Got to beat up old dogs like Flatnose there, because if you try one of the younger ones, they'll take you down.
The plan was working beautifully. Now all I needed was for him to stalk out of the room to calm down, or fetch an instrument of mayhem, or some more duct tape, anything. Instead, Marconi just spun on his heel, picked up a tire iron, and turned back to me, lifting it high.
Fuck Marconi, he snarled, and fuck you, wizard.
His muscles bunched beneath his old t-shirt, and he raised the iron above his head. His eyes gleamed with the same sort of animalistic fury I had beheld in the other lycanthropes the night before. His mouth was stretched into a feral grin, and I could see the cords in his neck standing out as he wound up to give me the death blow. I hate it when a plan falls apart. Chapter 23. I clenched my teeth and kicked my legs. The duct tape around my ankle gave way, but it was too late to do me any good. I didn't have time to get my weight beneath me to run, but I made the gesture in any case. Just one of those things you do when you're about to die, I guess.
Mr. Hendricks, came a very hard, very calm voice. If Parker does not put down the tire iron in the next second or two, please shoot him dead.
Yes, sir, Mr. Marconi,
Hendricks' rumbling basso answered. I looked over to my right to see Gentleman Johnny Marconi standing in a gray Italian business suit. Hendricks stood in front of him, and a bit to one side, in a much cheaper suit, huge and holding a pump-action shotgun with a short barrel, its stock worked into a pistol grip in his meaty paws. The gaping black mouth of the barrel was leveled at Parker's head. Parker's face snapped around to focus on Marconi at the same time as mine did. Parker's jaw clenched and his eyes narrowed into furious slits. His weight shifted from one foot to the other as though he were preparing to throw the tire iron.
That's a 12-gauge riot gun, Mr. Parker, Marconi said. I am fully aware of your rather special endurance at this time of the month. Mr. Hendricks' weapon is loaded with a solid slug ammunition, and after several rounds, have torn literal pounds of flesh from your body and ruptured the majority of your internal organs, I am reasonably certain that even you would perish.
Marconi smiled very politely, while Hendricks clicked the safety off the weapon and settled his feet as though he were expecting firing the weapon would knock him down.
Please, Marconi said, put down the tire iron.
Parker glanced back at me, and I could see the beast raging in his eyes, wanting to howl out and bathe in blood. It terrified me, made me go cold, right through my gut and down through my loins. There was more fury and rage there than any of the other members of the Street Wolves had demonstrated. Their own berserk losses of control had looked like a child's tantrum next to what I saw in Parker's eyes. But he controlled it. He lowered his arm, slowly, and took two steps back from me, and I felt my breath whisper out in a sigh of relief.
I wasn't dead. yet. My kick hadn't quite dragged the blanket off me, and I was still settled with my back against the steel post. They didn't know I was loose beneath the rough wool. It wasn't much of an advantage, but it was all I had. I needed to find a way to use it, and fast. "My people are coming," Parker growled. "If you try any more of that heavy-handed shit, I'll have you torn apart." "They are coming," Marconi agreed placidly, "but they are not yet here. Their motorcycles have all suffered flat tires, quite mysteriously. We have time to do business." I heard his shoes cross the concrete floor toward me, and I looked up at him. Marconi met my eyes without fear, a man in his mature prime, his hair immaculately graying at the temples, his custom-made suit displaying a body kept fit in spite of the advancing years. His eyes were the faded green of dollar bills and as opaque as mirrors. "Hi, John," I said. "You've got good timing." Marconi smiled. "And you have a way with people, Dresden," he said, glancing at the silent Parker with unveiled amusement. "You must have read a book. I'm already reasonably certain as to your reaction, but I thought I would give you another chance." "Another chance to what?" "I received a phone call today," Marconi said. "A Harley McFinn somehow discovered my personal number. He was quite irate. He said that he knew it was me who had destroyed his circle and set him up, and that he was going to deal with me tonight."
"I'd say you've had it then, John. Harley can be fairly destructive."
"I know. I saw the news programs from the station last night. A loop guru, is he?"
I blinked.
"How did you..."
Marconi waved a hand.
"The report you gave to Lieutenant Murphy. Such things have to be paid for, and thus copied and filed and copied and filed. It wasn't hard to obtain a copy for myself." I shook my head.
"Money isn't going to buy off Harley McFinn."
"Quite," Marconi said. "And my parents, God rest their souls, were in no position to leave me anything, much less articles of silver, or I deal with him myself. I have no idea who told them that I had wronged him, or why, but it seems perfectly clear that he believes it. Which brings us to you, Mr. Dresden." He reached into that expensive Italian jacket and drew out a folded sheaf of papers, the contract I'd seen before. "I want to make a deal with you." I stared at him in silence. "The same stipulations as before," Marconi continued. "In addition, I promise you, give you my personal oath, that I will see to it that the pressure is taken off of Lieutenant Murphy. I do have some friends at the mayor's office, and I'm certain something could be worked out." I started to tell him to go to hell, but I bit back the words. I was trapped at the moment. If I ran, Parker would probably lose it and tear me apart. If he didn't, Marconi would just point his finger and the hulking Mr. Hendricks would put me down with a 12-gauge slug. And Murphy, in spite of recent misunderstandings, was my friend. Or maybe it was more accurate to say that in spite of what had gone on lately, I was still Murphy's friend. Saving your job, getting the pressure from the politician's offer. Isn't that why I'd gotten involved in this to begin with? Wouldn't Murphy thank me for helping her? No, I thought. Not like that. She wouldn't want that kind of help. Magic she could accept. Help from money generated by human suffering, graft and deception was a different story. Marconi looked good in his gray suit and his perfect hair and his manicured hands. But he wasn't. My own hands weren't clean, but they were free. Things were desperate and getting worse the longer I waited. Maybe I could pull off enough magic to get myself out of this. I drew in a breath and focused on a pile of loose tools and metal parts on a workbench 20 feet away. I gathered together threads of will, feeling the pressure build with a sort of skewed intangibility to it, something I'd never felt before. I focused on my goal, on the rush of air that would lift the tools and parts and hurl them at Marconi, Parker, and Hendricks like so many bullets. And I prayed that I wouldn't catch myself at the edges of it on accident and get myself killed. I'd be breaking the first law of magic if any one of them died, and I might have to deal with the White Council later, but hell's bells, I didn't want to die on that concrete floor.
My head pounded, and I pushed the pain aside, focused, and breathed out,
Ventos y vidas.
The energy I'd gathered whispered out of me. The tools jumped and rattled in place, and then fell still again. Fire erupted behind my eyes. The pain was blinding, and I sucked in a breath and bowed my head forward, struggling not to fall to one side and reveal my lack of duct-tapedness. Oh, stars, it hurt like hell, and I clenched my teeth to keep from crying out. My chest heaved and strained to give me enough breath. I blinked tears out of my eyes and straightened again, facing Marconi. I didn't want him to see the weakness. I didn't want him to know my magic had failed.
Interesting, Marconi said, glancing at the workbench and then back to me. Perhaps you've been working too hard, he suggested. But I'm still willing to make the offer, Mr. Dresden. Otherwise, you understand, I have no interest in your well-being, and I will be forced to leave you here with Mr. Parker and his associates. If you do not come to work for me, you will die.
I glared up at Marconi and gathered in a breath to spit out a curse at him. To hell with him and his whole stinking breed of parasites. Polite and smiling bastards who didn't care about the lives they ruined, the people they destroyed, so long as business continued as usual. If I was going to die here, I was going to lay out a curse on Marconi that would make the grimmest old fairy tales you ever heard of sound like pleasant daydreams. I glanced at Parker, who was glaring suspiciously at Marconi, and stifled the curse as well. I lowered my head to hide my expression from Marconi. I had an idea.
He dies anyway, Parker growled. He's mine. You never said anything about him leaving with you.
Marconi stood, his mouth settled in a tight smile.
Don't start with me, Parker, Marconi said. I'll take what I want to take.
Last chance, Dresden.
This wasn't part of the deal, Parker said. I need him. I'll kill you before I let you take him.
Parker put one hand behind his back, as though scratching an itch. I glanced over toward the office door behind him and saw Flatnose crouched there in the doorway, mostly shielded by the door and unnoticed.
Perfect.
You needn't worry, Parker, Marconi said, his tone satisfied. He won't accept my offer. He'd rather die. I lifted up my head and kept my expression as blank as I could.
Give me a pen, I said.
Marconi's mouth dropped open. It was an intense pleasure to see the surprise on his face.
What? He said.
I enunciated each word carefully.
Give me a pen. I'll sign your contract.
I glanced aside at Parker and said more loudly, Anything to get away from these animals. Marconi stared at me for a moment, then reached toward his pocket. I could see his eyes, see him searching my expression. The gears were spinning in his head as he tried to work out what I was doing. Parker let out a sudden scream of rage and hurled the tire iron at Hendricks, who dodged to one side, too quickly for a man his size, and lifted his weapon. The office door exploded open and Flatnose threw himself onto the big man. They both went down to the concrete, struggling for possession of the shotgun.
The wizard's mine,
Parker howled and threw himself at Marconi. Marconi moved like a snake in his zillion-dollar business suit and made a curved knife appear in his hands. He swept it in an arc that was followed by a spray of blood from Parker's wrist, and the lycanthrope howled. I got up and ran like hell toward the door. My legs were shaky, my balance wasn't great, but I was moving, and I thought I had a fair chance of getting away. Over to my left, there was a roar of the shotgun going off and a wet red spray that went all over one wall and the ceiling. I didn't stop to see who had been killed, just jerked open the door. Agent Philip Denton stood 5 feet away from me in the cold mist of the autumn rain. The veins in his forehead were throbbing, and his short hair was frosted by mist. He was flanked by the pot-bellied Agent Wilson in his rumpled suit, his mostly bald head shining, and by the lean, savage-looking woman, Ben, her dark skin even darker in the evening's gloom and the glow of the streetlights. Her sensuous mouth peeled back into a startled snarl. Denton blinked in surprise, then narrowed his intensely gray eyes. The wizard mustn't escape, he said, his voice calm and precise. Kill him.
Ben's eyes gleamed, and she hissed something under her breath while reaching a hand into her jacket. Wilson did the same. I brought my forward momentum to a sudden halt, fell, and started scrabbling back into the building. But instead of drawing guns out of their jackets, they changed. It happened fast, nothing like you see in the movies. One moment there were two human beings standing there, and the next there was a flicker of shadow, and in a pair of enormous gaunt wolves, one the gray of Ben's mane, one the same brown as Wilson's receding hairline. They were huge, 6 feet long, including the tail, and as high as my belly at the shoulders. Their entirely human eyes shone, as did their bared fangs. Denton stood between them, his eyes gleamed with some dark breed of joy, and then he hissed, throwing his hands toward me. As though thrown by the motion, both wolves hurled forward. I flung myself through the door and slammed it closed. There were heavy thuds as the wolves hit the door behind me. I saw a motion to my right and threw myself down just before Hendricks pulled the trigger. The riot gun belched forth flame and huge sound and blew a hole the size of my face in the door behind me. I could still hear Parker's furious snarling somewhere in the dark, and I scrambled forward behind the bulk of the car and then ran toward the back of the cavernous garage, staying low. Outside, there was the thunder of a dozen engines and the sharp, heavy sounds of gunfire. Evidently, the street wolves had returned. I stumbled through the darkness and tried not to make enough sound to give someone a chance to shoot me. The door flew open at the front of the garage, letting in a flood of dim light that didn't help me much. I reached the back corner and sank down into it, then grabbed at something that turned out to be a toolbox. I came out with a heavy wrench and gripped it tightly. I was alone. I hurt myself using too much of my magic while on the go-go potion, and I didn't have anything left to throw now. Except for the wrench in my hands, I was unarmed. All around me, in the garage, there were sounds of gunshots and screams and thuds of flesh. As the animals fought for control of the jungle, and it was only a matter of time before one of them stumbled across a weakened and exhausted wizard named Harry Dresden. Talk about frying pans and fires. Chapter 24. It couldn't possibly get any worse than this, I thought. I cowered in the corner, clutching my captured wrench like a child's teddy bear, with no way out, and full of the knowledge that my magic had failed me. Oddly, that thought troubled me more than probable death. A lot more. Death was something that happened to everyone, only the timing was different for each of us. I knew that I would eventually die. Hell, I even knew I might die horribly. But I never thought that the magic would fail me. More accurately, I never guessed that I would fail it. I had pushed too hard, and my body wouldn't conduct the power I needed to utilize the forces I was accustomed to commanding. Granted, maybe I should have started with something smaller than a large and violent telekinesis, but the indication was there that I had burned out some internal circuitry. It might not ever come back. It was a loss of identity. I was a wizard. It was more than just a job, more than just a title. Wizardry was at the core of my being. It was my relationship with my magic, the way I used it. The things it let me do that defined me, shaped me, gave me purpose. I dwelled on these things while death danced over the concrete floor, clutching them like a sailor clinging onto the wreckage of his ship, trying to ignore the storm that had blasted it to pieces. I noted peripheral details of my pathetic hiding place. Marconi made a break for one of the garage doors, only to be pinned down behind the rusted truck by gunfire from some of the street wolves. Hendricks joined him, and a moment later the truck roared to life and crashed out through the garage door and into the gravel parking lot. Hendricks, in the rear of the truck, fired several blasts from the big shotgun back into the building, while the street wolves sent rounds skewing off after the truck. The real battle, though, took place between the street wolves and the FBI. It was largely a gunfight. Denton was armed with his FBI-issue automatic and what looked like an Uzi submachine gun. He cut down three of the lycanthropes with a swath of fire from the automatic weapon as he came through the door, and the two great wolves with him hurled into the darkness. Screams and savage snarling erupted from the shadows, and I could hear more of the lycanthropes dying, being torn apart by the enormous wolves that had once been Agents Ben and Wilson. Parker screamed orders somewhere in the dark, half incoherent with rage.